GiveSendGo is the number one free Christian crowdfunding site in the world. Yes, free. Other crowdfunding sites will charge you nasty, hidden fees, but not GiveSendGo. While our third-party processor does charge a small fee to givers upon donating, GiveSendGo's platform is free of fees because we believe you earn the money you raise. So the next time you're looking to raise money for a friend, or you've got a mission of your own, come to GiveSendGo.com, the number one free Christian crowdfunding site in the world.
All right, welcome everybody to the GiveSendGo Spotlight. Here I have with me Barbara Hemphill. Did I say that correctly, Barbara?
Yes.
Okay, good. Barbara Hemphill, she has an amazing campaign on our GiveSendGo platform. You can visit it by going to givesendgo.com/shepherd's house. On there, you'll find an excellent video describing this incredible story of how the Lord has brought people from all over the world to do something for his kingdom. And a real incredible description of the way that that's moving forward and how you can partner with that. So I have Barbara here, and we're going to ask a little bit about your story. I want to have you share with those who are watching a little bit about who you are. So Barbara, give us a little bit about who you are. You know, where are you from? How did you get to the place you are today?
Well, it's a long story. I just celebrated my 75th birthday, so it's kind of hard to put it all together. But I grew up on a farm in Nebraska. My uncle was a missionary to Africa. And when he was a doctor, and when he was in med school preparing, we had all this conversation about how I was going to go with him and be a nurse. Well, my brother got kicked by a horse and it made him bleed and I fainted, and that was the end of my nursing career. But then I was married to a man that during the Vietnam War was a conscientious objector and was drafted, but did not want to go to war. So we served with an organization that was working with the U.S. government to deliver food products in the West Indies. And so I was in the island of Grenada. When the war was over, we could have quit, but we really liked the work we were doing. And so we ended up going to India. And so in the 1970s, we were in India for almost 5 years. And while we were there, we adopted 3 orphan children. They were ages 3, 2, and 1. And they came to America. They're in America now. They're now in their late 40s and early 50s. They live in 3 different states. They're awesome people, and they're just such a joy. But it gave me a heart for India. You know, I'll just never forget when I arrived in India and got off of the airplane and got in a taxi and saw the poverty and everywhere. I was just overwhelmed. And as I was there, I grew to just love the Indian people and who they were and how intelligent they were and creative they were and how kind they were. And so I've always had a heart for that. My grandfather was a very religious person. I grew up in a religious family. We went to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night, always. Yeah. I mean, I don't think unless you had 105 degree temperature or something, maybe you didn't go. But I struggled a lot because my grandfather talked about hearing from God. And he'd say, God said such and such to me. And I used to go to revival meetings to the altar and fall on my knees and just pray, God, would you speak to me? But it seemed like he didn't. And at one point, my grandfather, at least this is how I remember it. And of course, you know, sometimes what you remember isn't true. But what I remember is that my grandfather said, if you don't hear from God, it's because you have skeletons in your closet. Well, ironically, when my first husband and I moved back to New York City from India, he was working for a nonprofit, didn't make enough money to support the family. And I wanted these 3 adopted children, one had special needs, to be my top priority. So I couldn't really work at a job because that would mean the kids would be second to my job. And I wasn't agreeable to that. I was trained as a musician. I taught school music. And then in India, I taught privately, but our apartment was too small to do that. And I didn't have the certification to do music. And it's like, okay, what can I do? And I thought, I'm just going to listen to what people are complaining about that I can fix that they'll pay me for. So I sat on the playground, and at first I was going to do, I grew up on a farm. So I used to follow my father and my grandfather around. So I was pretty handy. So we lived in a high rise apartment. And so it's like, okay, I can fix lamps and faucets and things. Well, then I found out you had to you had to belong to a union to do that. So no, I can't do that. So I would listen on the playground, I'd sit and listen, and I'd listen to people talking about being disorganized, about clutter, about not eating off the dining room table for a month because it was piled full of papers, or fighting with their children about their cluttered rooms, or fighting with their husband about the clutter they dumped on the kitchen counter. And when she wanted to go and cook it, she couldn't get to the kitchen, or not filing their extension or filing an extension on the income taxes because they couldn't find the receipts. And I thought, they didn't have my mother. I grew up in the second floor of a tenant farmhouse. In the early days, it didn't have any running water, but we did everything with systems. My mother was the administrator for a bank president for 46 years. And so things were always, and my father was a farmer. So when you're a farmer, you have systems. You have to do things for the cattle and for the crops. And so I thought that's what everybody did. Well, I realized that a whole lot of people didn't have systems for anything. So I took $7 out of the grocery money, which is a big deal because I used to walk 20 blocks because I didn't have 50 cents to the bus. And the ad said disorganized. I organized kitchens, papers, closets, you name it, called Barbara Hemphill. And I got 3 crank calls from guys trying to pick me up. And the 4th one was from a 55-year-old widow whose husband was an attorney. He died very suddenly and left behind piles of paper. And she didn't know what to do. And she didn't have any children. So in many ways, I did what a daughter would have done. She didn't know that she was my first client, and I didn't tell her, but I was terrified because I charged $10 an hour. And I was so afraid she was going to ask me what made me think I was worth $10 an hour. And to promote the business, I would go to church groups and garden clubs and PTA. I didn't even have a business card. And I would do speeches on 10 ways to organize your kids, or 10 ways to get organized for Christmas, or 10 ways to organize the kitchen or something. But I quickly learned that paper was the number one organizing challenge. And they would ask me questions like, how long do you keep? And in those days, it was bank statements, because we used to get those canceled checks wrapped up in bank statements in big, thick envelopes that people kept for decades. I didn't know the answer to that question. So I went to the library to get the answer. I didn't find a user-friendly answer. So long story short, in 1988, I wrote a book called Taming the Paper Tiger, which was about all of the papers that come into the household. Everything from insurance papers, medical records, tax records, recipes, children's artwork, photographs, junk mail, everything. And it became a bestseller, and I became known as the Paper Tiger Lady for many years. What's interesting to me is I didn't think about it until decades later, but isn't it fascinating? And I think this is God's sense of humor, that my grandfather said, you're not hearing from God because you have to clean the skeletons out of your closet. And that's exactly what I started doing, was cleaning the skeletons out of
your closet. Oh, wow.
So
well, that's incredible. Wow. That's so funny. That's such a neat connection. That's incredible.
Well, then we moved from New York to Washington, D.C. And I went to the Small Business Administration to ask them to help me start my business there. And they basically laughed me out of the room and said, this is not a business. Nobody's paying for organizing closets, cupboards, and kitchens. And today it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And so I'm still in the industry. I have a company now called Productive Environment Institute. We define productive environment as an intentional setting in which everyone can accomplish their work and enjoy their lives. And we work not in homes anymore, except for home offices. But we work in businesses helping employees to accomplish their work and enjoy their lives. So I have a certification program and we work virtually. So it's been very easy to help people. We don't have to, sometimes people don't want you to see their clutter because they're embarrassed. Well, we don't have to see it. We just tell them what to do about it and we do it virtually. So it's really exciting. So on my LinkedIn profile, my last line says, as a follower of Jesus, I pray that others will feel his love, whether I ever mention his name. As a result of that, you can imagine I get a lot of scammy kinds of things. You know, people sending me, one person sent me pictures of bloody bodies that they were being persecuted and stuff. But a man named Cannery reached out and said, I feel called by God to be a pastor, but I don't have any training. And I just felt in my heart that he was authentic. So I asked him, I said, well, what kind of training do you want? You know, have you chosen a particular program? And he said, no, I really don't. And so we began to chat back and forth a little bit. Well, what he didn't tell me for quite some time, a couple of months at least, we chatted like a couple of times a day, was that he and his wife and his three sons were literally on the verge of starvation. They were digging up roots and boiling them and eating leaves and berries and nuts and things and drinking water to keep from feeling hungry. Mm-hmm. And I just was astounded. I was also astounded that his English was impeccable. I joke and say his English is better than some of my neighbors. And I asked him, how did you, he told me he'd only had 2 years of formal education. And I said, how did you learn to speak and write so well? And he said, well, my grandfather told me if I ever wanted to amount to anything, I needed to learn English. So I did. And he's actually on his phone. I can't even imagine how you could do this. On his phone, he has written a book about his life. And he sent it to me. And one of my goals is to get that put into something that can be shared. I mean, it's just, it's incredible.
Right. That is incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how it kind of.
That's how you got there. Wow. Yeah. So this project, you know, that you started this campaign for, what in that relationship and in that process, what prompted you to begin this project?
Well, when we first started talking, he was living in a house that they'd moved out of the city in order to get away from COVID, actually. And so they were in a very, very rural area, almost on the edge of Burma. And they were living in a friend's house. And then while we were talking, they had to move. That house was no longer available. And he wanted to go back to his hometown where his father lived. And I'd communicated with his father. When I met him, his father was 70 years old. He was very depressed. He wanted to die. His wife had died. He'd been sick for a long time. He hadn't been employed for years. And he just said, you know, there's no reason for me to be here anymore. And I said, well, God still has you here for a reason, I'm sure. So we began communicating as well, and where Cannery wanted to move back to his hometown, which is in Manipur, where his father lives. Well, there's no housing there. He said, there's just literally nothing there. So that was when I said, okay, let's build a house there. Let's see if I can raise the money to build a house there. In the meantime, a friend found a house that he could live in for that was about halfway there. So it wasn't in Manipur, but it was at least closer to Manipur. So he moved his family there. My husband and I have been supporting their family. They since had another child. They have four beautiful boys. Cannery calls me mom in traditional Indian culture, and the boys call me Grammy. And I just love them as I would my own children. I can't wait to meet them someday. And they're memorizing Bible verses in English and sending me videos and it just, you know, I just absolutely love them dearly. And so they moved that place and that's where they are now. And so we started raising the money to try to get a house built in Manipur. Well, in the meantime, just recently, The person who owns that house had told them that they have to get out because somebody else, they want to give that house to somebody else. So that's why this building, this has become an emergency level, because to find a place for six people to live is really incredible. Yeah. Well, God has blessed us in the most amazing ways, in that, of course, we didn't have land or anything. And one day he said, God told me that I'm supposed to go to the headman and ask him for a plot of land. Well, everyone said he was crazy because he's Christian and the headman is Hindu and everyone around is Hindu, so that he was really taking a risk. But he said he felt that that was what God had told him to do. And so, of course, when he's up, I'm asleep, and I was asleep in bed and God woke me up, which is not something that happens often. So I was like, I was sure that's what it was, saying that I should pray, because he told me I'm going to go see the headman. So I got up and I went and sat in what I call my prayer chair for about an hour. And I just prayed for his safety and prayed that everything would be okay. And the next morning he said, Mom, I'm so happy to tell you that the headman, although he didn't believe the gospel that I shared with him, he said, we talked with him and his assistant. He went with his father. So he and his father went, they talked with the headman and the assistant, and they talked for an hour and a half. And he said, even though he didn't believe the gospel, he gave us an affidavit for an acre of land.
Wow.
Which is a miracle. I mean, it's just, now that doesn't give us the land, that only gave you the affidavit, the permission to buy the land, but that was a really big thing. So my husband's a very generous man. So he basically funded the amount to be able to buy the land. And then we started working on raising some money to get to the land. And one of the ironies is that in order to get to the land, they needed to go on the neighbor's land, and they were Hindus and they would not allow them to use that. So then we had to pay several thousand more dollars in order to dig a road in order to get to where our property was. It was quite a huge undertaking. It was the most miraculous thing I've seen in years, in that he'd hold up his phone and he'd show me pictures of the bulldozers digging the dirt out and dynamiting out and all that. It was just like, it's just, I mean, I've seen lots of things in my life, but that was the most amazing. So we got the land leveled and we got the road built. And so then the next thing they said was, we need to have a well, because we can't build a building there until we have some water. So then it's raised the money to get the well. And they had a dowser came, which made me smile, because when I grew up on the farm in Nebraska, the dowser used to come and when they wanted to dig a well. So I was familiar with that. And he said it would have to be 350 feet deep. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, and what if we dig this far? Well, it turned out we did get the water. We have the water. The water was dirty, but the well digger said it'll be clean in a month. Well, in 4 days, it was clean.
Oh, come on. Amen. That's God for you.
And what's really interesting is that the Hindu neighbors who wouldn't let us use their property are now using the water from our well, and we're happy to let them do it. So God is.
Amen. Merciful. Oh, that is incredible. That is just such a cool testimony of this whole thing. Now, you've partnered with a ministry called Global Hope India, and that's run by a man named Kevin White. Is that correct?
Right. That's
and
correct.
And he's helping the campaign. So this campaign you're doing is through their nonprofit. So donations are tax deductible. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And how this happened was, I was going to do a 401c3, and I had a woman helping me. And then her husband became very ill, had to have a liver transplant, and she couldn't. And it's like, I don't have the skill set to be able to do that. And so I just did an internet search to find ministries that were supporting India. And I found Global Hope India, which is 30 minutes from my house. And I didn't even know it existed. And I called Kevin and I told him what I was doing. And he himself he's taken 50 mission trips, taken over 1,000 people, 50 mission trips to India through the years. So he knows India very, very well. And he said that he would be happy to put the Shepherd's House under them. So that meant that I didn't have to do a 501c3, and that it could still be a tax deductible, and that I didn't have to. And I, one of my life principles is together we're better. It's like the body of Christ. You know, it's like we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We need to find people who are already doing what we want to do and then lift them up so that we're not all struggling. And that was like, oh, this is such an answer. And it's just been awesome. So that's where the money goes. It's all tax deductible.
I love that. And I love it when we find those just divine connections, those things that can bring us together, because it's so true. We are so much better when we are together. I love that. So that's the progress this far. There's property, there's now water. What is also hoped to be accomplished with this campaign?
Okay. Well, the next step is we need to build the building. So we have a design. They're building the pump house for the building right now, but then the next thing will be to actually build the building. We have a design for the building. It's a three-story house, and it's intended to not just be a home, but to be an entrepreneurial center and a house church. Because, you know, when you think about Paul or about Peter building the churches, church started with in homes, and what better thing to do? So this house is designed that it'll be a place that their family and extended family can live, but also, and they already have a track record, because through Global Hope India, we have been able to get them Bibles. And like I mentioned about his father recently walked 8 miles in order to give a one way. 16 miles, give a Bible to one person. And he's delivered, I think, 85 Bibles now. And when they have, none of their family had ever had birthday parties before. And I just believe birthdays are to be celebrated. I mean, it's to celebrate that God's given you another year. Mm-hmm. So my husband and I have always sent them money at birthday times for them to have a birthday party. And they invite the neighbors and they turn it into a Bible study.
That's awesome. Wow. That's so great.
And so it's like, they already have the wherewithal. I mean, the ability to teach, and they're willing to do it. So we can just see Bible studies and small groups and children's Bible clubs and all kinds of things going on in terms of sharing the gospel. But then also, we have an acre of land, and Cannery said that it's possible that they can grow lemon trees and some things that they can do there. And so I'm an entrepreneur. My license plate says Hope Fool. And I called it that because I want people to ask me what it means. And when they do, then I say, well, I'm a fool for Jesus.
Come on.
But H-O-P-E stands for Help Others Pursue Entrepreneurship. Because all the big problems in the world are solved through entrepreneurs. That's just the way it is. And so we believe that we can help his neighbors to be entrepreneurs. And it's a way that we can reach out to non-believers to help them support themselves and to show the love of Jesus and to show how the power of the Bible and biblical principles work. So it'll be a house church, it'll be an entrepreneurial center, and it'll be a home. And my heart just bursts when I think about it. So that's our next project, is to raise the money to do that. Prices keep going up. Every time we get a quote, it goes up again. But at this point, it looks as though we could build the three-story house for somewhere in the realm of $70,000. So that's what we're in the process of raising right now.
So that is incredible. That is so cool. And now we're going to be coming to the end of our spotlight, but we really want our people to know, what is the biggest stumbling block? What are the things we should be praying for? I know there are a number of people who get on the site, just, you know, they might have $5 and they give it, or some just go through campaigns to pray. We also have our Hope Prayer Partners group here that are praying every single day for the campaigns that are going on. So what's the biggest stumbling block you guys are facing right now? How can people be praying and helping you break through that stumbling block?
Well, you mentioned something that I think is really important, which is sometimes people don't donate because they think, oh, $5 wouldn't make that much difference. Well, they forgot about the loaves and the fishes.
Yeah.
Jesus is still in the business of multiplication. So that's really important. I think my biggest stumbling block is that it's very difficult to tell the story. Like, for example, I would love to have the boys on and so people could see them and how they're sharing the gospel with their neighbors. But for security reasons, it's just not a good idea to do that. So it's really difficult to explain the gloriousness of this project. That's one thing. I'm also limited in that I just it's hard. I don't have the skills exactly to do that. So it's a much bigger opportunity than I'm able. So I think my biggest stumbling block is just feeling frustrated that I cannot begin to express how awesome it is. And I'm so thankful for people who will contribute in any way. Prayer is powerful. So please don't hesitate to think that that wouldn't make any difference or that $10 wouldn't make a difference. But on the other hand, think about, you know, how many things do we, in fact, I just sold a property that I had that I was leasing to one of my business partners. And God convicted me that I wasn't using the resources that he'd given me in the best way. And I sold the condo in order to have some additional profit to put into this project. So I'm helping them instead of putting it all back into my company. So I think that often we underestimate what we can do. We're such a society, you know, my whole business has been based on clutter is postponed decisions. And I wrote a book called Less Clutter, More Life. And the premise is that physical and digital clutter is a symptom of emotional and spiritual clutter. And we are a society that's just so stuff oriented. We're so addicted to our stuff. And we spend so much money on stuff that we don't need and we don't know. And now we have a whole generation of people my age who have saved things for their children and their grandchildren, and their children and grandchildren don't want them. And that's brought up a whole lot of issues. And so I just encourage people to think about how you could generate income. You might be very surprised at how you could generate income that would really change and save others people's lives. And not only will it save this family's lives, but they're spreading the gospel. Just this morning, Cannery sent me a message. Mom, I'm so happy to you. The Bibles came in time and I was able to witness to the well drillers. So the well drillers heard the gospel from Cannery. So any help that we give, we'll be so grateful.
Oh, well, there, you guys heard it here first. This is an excellent project to be pouring into, sewing into. It is connected to a charity, a 501c3. So if you do donate, you get a tax receipt. So pray about that. You know, ask the Lord what you want to give or make a decision and just do it. That's what it says in, you know, Corinthians, to make know what you're going to give in your heart and do so cheerfully. And so I would encourage you guys, the link for this campaign, you'll see below, you'll see in our description. Go check that out. Go watch the longer video describing a bit more of the story and read the story that's going on there. Just like Barbara shared, it's one thing to be trying to express something for somebody else, you know, when you know the people and you know the situation and you're just trying to share their heart. It's a hard thing to do because there's so many beautiful things that you want to express in that. And so take a minute to pray, to consider sowing into this. This is an excellent thing. Again, it's givesendgo.com/Shepherd's House. And that's the ministry's name. We also just want to, you know, shout out to Kevin White and Global Hope India. You guys are doing awesome. Keep the work going. And Barbara, thank you so much for giving your life for those that are around you and for living in a way that would benefit other people so that, you know, just like just going back to what your grandfather said about the skeletons in the closet and hearing from the Lord, you know, as you've just gone about doing that in a practical way, going about doing it in a spiritual way and giving your life so that people can begin to walk in the things that God is calling them to walk in. That is a profound, profound life that you're living. And I I thank you for doing so faithfully. And so thank you for coming on to our Spotlight, Barbara. People, go check out that campaign. Be praying for these people. And let's be standing with them and believing for what God's going to do through this wonderful opportunity. Thank you all for tuning in. Again, this is Barbara, and I'm Hudson, Director of Gifts and Go Charities. Thank you for tuning in with us today. We're blessed to have you. Have a great day.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to Shine Brightly and hearing about the wonderful things God is doing through people all around the world. Do you or someone you know have a Gifts and Go campaign you'd like featured in one of our Spotlight episodes? If the answer is yes, fill out the form linked in this episode's description, or head on over to our Gab or Facebook pages and fill out the form pinned at the top of the page. Once your form is submitted, your campaign will be considered for this amazing opportunity to be interviewed by one of the co-founders of Gifts and Go to discuss and spread the word about your campaign. Keep shining brightly.